You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 517, I'm welcoming Erin Nelson and Colleen Montague.
Really allowing that to be a natural process of grief, because you'll never experience that forever. We talk a lot in the book about storms and how you will feel like the storm's coming in, and it's like there's a storm in your body. You'll feel that pressure, and you'll just feel like it's in there and it needs to come out sometime, somehow. And whether that's through tears or talking or moving or screaming, whatever it is, but storms never last forever. So knowing that as you express it, and you find your resources of how to feel better, that's how you begin to heal. And so it's just a natural process that happens over and over.
Erin and Colleen are the co-authors of a book called When Grief Comes Home, A Gentle Guide for Living Through Loss While Supporting Your Child. I get several parents who reach out to me asking about that, whoever they've lost, and then trying to guide their kids through it. And these gals are qualified guides. Erin and Colleen are both part of a place called Jessica's House, a grief support center for children and families. Erin is the founder and executive director, and Colleen is a licensed marriage and family therapist and the director of community outreach there. Erin has personally been struck by so much tragedy and loss, and she'll share more about that in this episode. And she's also an advanced certified trauma practitioner and has been supporting grieving families for more than 20 years. My hope is that this conversation not only encourages you if you are in a place of grief, but it's something you can point your friends to always, and they do give some great practical tips on how to move through the grief process, even talking about what happens with your body when you experience trauma. So great insights, and definitely check out their book. It's linked in the show notes. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Colleen and Erin, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I am so thrilled to get to share you with my listeners, because man, oh man, it's a topic that is challenging when you're walking through grief. It's challenging when you're walking with someone through grief. And I often get asked by a lot of parents how to handle when grief interacts with their kids. And so we're going to talk through all that today. But I'd love for you each to introduce yourselves. We'll start with Colleen. Can you kind of tell a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Heather. I've been a longtime listener of you, so I'm just excited to meet you in person and grateful for the work you're doing in the world. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, and just learned early on in my career that the most profound work I could do was when I walked alongside someone who was grieving, and just to get to come alongside, help them just sift through the trauma of it all, and watch as their spark reemerged in time. And I started to really focus my work on that, and then became a volunteer for Jessica's House, which is peer support grief related services. And oh man, I just felt at home immediately and thought, man, I hope I could work here someday. And then I did. And so a few years later, I was just lucky enough to get to come on staff and work alongside Erin, and just so grateful for the work that we get to do with families. They teach us so much every day.
And where's Jessica's house? That's hard to say sometimes.
Sometimes it is. I agree. We're located in the Central Valley of California. So we're in Turlock. We're just kind of right in the heart of all the agriculture. And just it's such a sweet, sweet space that we've been able to create. And our services for families are at no cost to them. And so just always really trying to give some really good support to those who are grieving.
Do parents often, they fly in?
No, the groups are every other week. And so they'll come and they're always meeting again with the same families and same facilitators. So there's a community that starts to be built. There are other grief centers across the country. And so if any of your listeners are curious, if they have one nearby, they could go to nacg.org. That's the National Alliance for Children Who Are Grieving. And there's a search engine there where they could see if there is something like what we have in their neck of the woods.
Yeah, because I know that's going to happen. People are going to be like, how do I get to be a part of Jessica's house? Okay, Erin, it's your turn. You get to share a little bit longer about your story, because it's a lot of the reason you got into the work you got into. So tell us more about your family and your how you got into grief therapy.
Thank you, Heather. And like you said, I just really had a deep invitation. It wasn't one I ever wanted. But when I was 26 years old and my children were young, my husband, Tyler, was involved in a mid-air collision. He was fishing with his friends up in Alaska, and he had been really looking forward to this trip. And at that time, I was visiting his parents in the Monterey, California area, and I received a phone call in the middle of the night from his brother telling me that his plane had collided with another and that there were no survivors. And it was really my first time ever experiencing any kind of profound loss. And I'll never forget that morning and just packing the kids up and putting my youngest, who was 3 at the time, into his car seat and driving home and just kind of wondering, like, how is everybody driving around? And, you know, my whole world has changed. And it was a very profound loss. And as I just told my son Cody about what had happened, I'll never forget just being in the backyard sandbox that his daddy had built and just telling him that his daddy's body had just really had been hurt so badly that it didn't work anymore. And so I'm just telling him and telling my daughter that their dad had died. It was just a moment in my life that I'll never forget. And just as I learned about children's grief, kind of through their lens and what they needed and what I noticed in them and, you know, anxiety and wanting me close. And it made me just wonder how many other people were in my position and who were wanting to help their children get through something like this, losing their dad. And then a few months later, my mom, who lived with bipolar disorder, she died of suicide. And my sister was 15 at the time, so she came to live with us. And she, you know, just having this teenager now in our home and having a grieving teen and grieving kids, it was just a season of our lives of trauma and experiencing trauma in our body and learning for the first time that we needed to be surrounded by the love of our community. And so grateful that I had others to hold this with me. I had a really good friend who came alongside me after Tyler died, and she really walked with me just every day. And she came over and helped me with the laundry, and she helped take the kids to school. And I think that was the very first time we called that kind of alongsiding. And that was the first time I experienced the power of having someone alongside me. And then realized that there were others who didn't have that. And so that's kind of where the idea of Jessica's house was born.
And if losing a spouse and your mom is not hard enough, mm-hmm. fast forward how many years until you experienced another loss?
Yeah. So I went on and I remarried, and I remarried a wonderful guy from our church. His name is Brian, and we had some really sweet years of healing and starting Jessica's House, and we had a son named Carter who was just a delight. He was really just the joy of our life, and you know, he was a musician. He loved to lead worship at church, and he loved to play the piano, and he also loved working on cars. And in 2019, he was involved in a car accident. So we got another kind of late night phone call saying that he was in an accident. And, you know, driving to the hospital that night, it's hard to put into words, really, just hoping and praying that he was okay. And he did live through the day, and we were able to gather all of our family and say goodbye to him. And that really started me on something new. It was a new way to grieve. It was a very raw, different way of experiencing grief in my body and learning how to express it, needing to deepen my support, and also starting this journey of writing that I had done a little bit after Tyler had died. And so that's kind of where the book was born. And over the past few years, writing this book and wanting to come alongside other parents who experience these profound losses that just change everything.
I mean, I have communicated to you. I'm so sorry that this is part of your story. I think you offer a lot of hope to those who are listening who've experienced any loss, whether it's a grandparent or a parent or a child or a spouse. We can't compare grief, but I do think it compounds. And when we don't get the opportunity to say goodbye, so the suddenness of loss for Tyler and your mom, and even though you had time in the hospital with your son, it's just – that's significant. It matters. How long had you been doing Jessica's House when your son passed away?
Yeah, so I started Jessica's House in 2011. And I think, you know, Heather, I think I had this little idea that maybe if I would help other families, maybe nothing else would happen.
Oh, like we're like some formula idea. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yes. I'll just keep helping people and maybe grief won't touch us. And when grief comes home, as the book title says, you know, you never expect it to come home to you. You know, it comes home for other people and you just think, oh, that loss will never touch me. And you kind of develop fears, you know, you have fears about could this happen in our family? And so I was just so busy serving families. We had just built a new building for Jessica's House and we were, you know, doing in the middle of a capital campaign. And I just never imagined that grief would come home for me again.
And we are a faith-based show. And I can imagine having walked through my own grief and questioning, like waking up one morning, I don't think there's a God. We made this whole thing up. There's no heaven. It's all made up stuff that we just make ourselves feel better. Did you have any crisis of faith, or what was your faith journey throughout these many losses, if you're willing to share?
Absolutely. I think when I think back on Tyler's death, there was something about the way he died that oddly comforted me because it was such a unique, very rare situation. And for some reason, I just thought if that happened, God allowed it in some way. And I was comforted by this midair collision, like it was a clear blue sky. And somehow I trusted him in that. And I don't know why I just really held on to my faith. I would say during that time, my faith really deepened. And it was something I remember specifically. It took me a really long time to sleep with the light off. And I remember just having my Bible and having the kids like sleep on each side of me and really holding on to verses in the Bible, like being comforted by God and comforting others someday. And just really profound that God is my strong tower, that he's the father to the fatherless and the defender of widows. And all of that made just really created hope in me. And I have to say that after Carter died, I felt a very deep feeling of not feeling safe in the world. And I wondered, like, just the prayers that we pray for our kids and the hope and trust that we have in God that He will bring people home. There was something there that really, really shook my faith. I would say it shattered my faith. And I had to be very honest with God. And I think just very, very raw. Even at the funeral, I was protesting. And we talk a lot at Jessica's house about how protest is such a necessary part of grief. And I remember just after months of just saying to God, like, you abandoned me. Like, I trusted you for safety. And one morning, I just felt Him lean in. And just really just say to me, like, it's okay. Like, if you don't trust me, like, I'm here. And however long it takes, like, I am with you. And I just felt that little leaning in. And somehow it did bring me into a new found trust with God and a newfound relationship that was very different than I had before, because I had really worked it out with God. I mean, I really, really did. I mean, I told Him and protested and screamed and did everything that felt organic in me, natural and raw in me. And so just allowing that process to happen, I feel like it was a new bond. In some ways, it was a new way of being with Him. And so it was an interesting process, but it had to be real.
Well, I know there are moms listening. I have a mom friend who's lost a child in the last year, and watching her grieve. Again, we don't compare grief, but there is just an absolute, I don't even know, just awful, awful, crushing, soul-crushing feeling to losing a child, no matter what age they are, but particularly if you've gotten to know their personalities and come to love them. For the mom that is true for, Colleen, do you have any guidance? Or, I mean, for sure we're encouraging her to get this grief support and community, but maybe she hasn't had anything. Where would you start comforting her?
Yeah, I just think I love that you're just making space to honor that, just the enormity of that loss. You know, that's so important. And I think if she can find those people in her life that will do that with her, you know, that alongside her, that will honor just the devastation and not try to rush her through it, you know, not try to, you know, bright side her with, hey, you know, you'll see them again. So bright siding messages, you know, they come with such good intention. You know, people just want to pull us out of our pain. They don't want us to sit in it. And so they might say, you know, hey, you're going to see them again, or time heals all wounds, or God wouldn't give you more than you can handle. And so much of the time, you know, yes, we can trust that we'll see our people again, our loved ones in heaven, but it doesn't negate the need to grieve their loss here now, because we all want them back, you know. And so to not use our faith as a way to brightside ourselves even, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, moms, I'm thinking of moms specifically, try to stay very busy in the early days. You know, that distraction can, they feel like can help, or they jump into advocacy work really fast, you know, creating foundations or walks or, and those are all very honorable ways to like put some energy and honor to your loved one. But at the end of the day, we can't go around grief. We have to go through it. And that comes with sitting in those hard spaces. Erin, can you share what your friend told you when you text her one day? Share what you told her and her response to you.
Yes. And one morning I was just feeling a lot of darkness in my soul. And I texted a friend who had also lost a child. And I said, I feel like I'm falling into the darkness. And she texted me back, the darkness will hold you, like in a good way. like it will comfort you and you'll find your way in it. And I think what I learned, and as we talk to families at Jessica's house, it's allowing the darkness to be the darkness. Gerald Sitzer talks about going into the east and finding the sun, which means you go into the darkness. And so much of the time we want to run after the sun, but it really is in feeling and experiencing our grief and allowing the darkness to hold us that we heal. And we find a natural buoyancy. It's almost like if you're diving down into the water, like in the ocean, and it gets dark, but the sun's up there. And as you go into the darkness, you naturally can come back up again and find the sun. But really allowing that to be a natural process of grief, because you'll never experience that forever. We talk a lot in the book about storms and how you will feel like the storm's coming in, and it's like there's a storm in your body. You'll feel that pressure, and you'll just feel like it's in there and it needs to come out sometime, somehow. And whether that's through tears or talking or moving or screaming, whatever it is, but storms never last forever. So knowing that as you express it, and you find your resources of how to feel better, that's how you begin to heal. And so it's just a natural process that happens over and over, just like a wave. It's the building and peaking and receding. And that is how we get through grief, just breath by breath.
And we've been focusing on the person who has had the loss and a little bit about being a friend. Talk to me about when you're husband Tyler passed away and you were comforting your kids, and they're so little and they're trying to process, and you share some of the very innocent, real questions they ask. But one that I get from parents a lot is it okay for my kids to see me cry? Do I need a lot of moms feel like they need to hold it all together and not kind of quote unquote fall apart in front of their kids? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Aaron or Colleen, I don't know who wants to take that.
Yeah. Just as we're talking about crying in front of our kids, we know that when we cry, we model healthy grief, right? And so kids get to learn from us as we allow those emotions to just come up as we feel them, that we're not trying to blink away our tears or push it down. They learn to attune to their body and what they need. And I think kids are so keen at just having a very strong sense about what the truth is and what their parents are experiencing. So even if we're not crying, they sense that there's something off. And so just as we're modeling, and we can even speak of what we're feeling of like, I feel really sad right now. And it really helps when I cry. You know, we had a child who said that it felt like there was a sponge inside of their heart. And when it was just got really, really heavy, and then it was like when he cried, he would just wring it out and he felt lighter again. So how great to be able to, as parents, allow our child to experience that feeling of expression and feeling better. And so we're modeling that. And crying, I mean, when we cry, it's our nervous system's way of coming back to just feeling that, you know, feeling of rest and serenity, and, you know, where we're not feeling so anxious. And so it really is our nervous system's way of resetting itself. And so much happens when we cry. And so we don't ever want to push it away because it's so useful to us and in our healing.
I would add that there's three things that are happening. You're showing your kiddos that it's okay to go there and it doesn't last forever. You know, they see you go into that space and cry, but then it ends. And so hopefully that can make it a little less scary. And then also, you don't, like Aaron said, they know something's not right, obviously, you know. And so if you negate your feelings, you're also negating theirs and their thought or their natural inclination to express it. But if you're pretending like everything's okay, then that discounts what they're feeling in their own body, you know. And so much of the time, we don't want to cause our children more pain. You know, you don't want to cry or talk about it because you're afraid that you're going to make them sad. But the reality is everybody's sad. And talking about it isn't going to make you feel more sad. It actually does help you feel better to go there. And so just like Erin said, it's modeling how we're going to mourn.
So that's one extreme where we're talking about emotions that are coming out and is it okay to let them out? With this loss that we just had in our community of an eighth grader, it was my son's classmate. And it was very hard to navigate how to help him grieve. And a teen boy, it's tricky. So I know everyone grieves differently, but what advice do you have if it feels like that natural process isn't happening or doesn't seem to be happening in what you would imagine is a healthy way because it's not like how you're doing it? Like, talk to us through. I can even think of couples who've lost a child and one parent is, you know, overly expressive and sharing pictures and constantly working through it externally and the other one's kind of shoving it down, you know, almost the yin and the yang of grief. How do you help the person that it doesn't seem like they're moving through the darkness or the waves of grief?
Yeah, I think a lot of times with teens, it can sometimes look like indifference if they're not going there. And like you said, everybody grieves so differently. You know, even just those that are grieving the same loss, it looks different for everybody. And just honoring that, you know, just because you're not crying doesn't mean you're not sad. It doesn't mean that you're not grieving within. And so as a parent, Erin's analogy that I've stolen from her, I love, is just as with our teens and young adults, like we just need to be a potted plant. You know, we need to be there when they're ready for us, when they are ready to kind of come in. And so as long as you are able to have that presence, and go there, like bring up the conversation, talk about this person that they've lost as just a way of saying like, hey, we can, I'm here for this. Like, I'll talk about it if you want. And even if it comes in lighter moments, like, oh, he really used to like that too, huh? Bringing him into the present moment shows your kid that you're not afraid to talk about it and that you're here when they're ready.
I would say too, just what we notice at Jessica's house, especially with the teens, is sometimes they teach us so much just about with their behavior. And you may notice that something's just a little bit different than before. And so much of the time we're just decoding kind of their behavior and noticing what's a little bit different and being able to just try to open up opportunities. Something that we really do a lot at Jessica's house is we like to talk about mirroring energy. And so being able to, if they're not wanting to go there and they're wanting to stay kind of up and like, you know, like still having fun because they want to, they're teenagers, right? And that we're mirroring that and we're matching them there. And also as they're talking, that we're reflecting their words. And a teen I know once said, you know, I just feel like my friends don't understand what I'm going through. And we could just say, hey, you know, you're feeling really misunderstood right now by your friends. And so we're mirroring kind of their words with their energy and reflecting their words. So we're not going outside of what they're telling us and what they're teaching us with their behavior, but we're really reflecting it. And I think there's a lot of trust building there. Another way that we can build trust with our kids is just telling them the truth. And sometimes we want to protect them. And I know that sometimes if someone died in ways that are hard to talk about, we may not want to tell them all the details. And but they're hearing it from their neighbors and the cousins. And so becoming that person as a parent that your child goes to, it builds lifelong trust. So being the one that tells the truth, even when it's hard to have that conversation, and doing it developmentally appropriate, of course, you know, we're talking about teens, but it could be if they're younger kids that we're finding out what questions they have and we answer those questions and we don't go beyond that. But it's just becoming that person that they know that they can come to for the truth.
And even just like with teens too, and you've probably experienced this, Heather, just sometimes like talking around a task, you know, getting a puzzle out or putting something together, or that drive time where you're not making that direct eye contact, but you're just sitting next to each other, sitting on the couch watching a show, just that proximity, but not in an intimidating kind of investigative, like, so how are you feeling? You know, just like that's not maybe what they're looking for, but your constant presence is telling them, I'm here for you when you're ready.
For the mom who's concerned that a loss, whether it was a grandparent or it was a parent or maybe even a younger sibling, and they're concerned about how their child is processing that, at what point do they need to consider outside help? Like they're like, maybe we're at a point that my presence and my reflective listening is not enough for this child. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest?
Yeah, anytime we see a child that where their eating habits or sleeping or academic performance is dropping, it's always a good idea to get outside help. And, you know, we think about even peer support and parental support. There are all these layers. It can never hurt. Just, you know, even starting with your pediatrician and finding a counselor. Play is such a powerful way for kids to process their grief. Here at Jessica's house, we have a hospital room and we have sand tray play, and we have a room for music and art. And there are so many ways that you can do that in your own home, but also finding professionals to give them choices on how they best process a loss and how they best can find a way to feel better in their body when they're feeling unsafe and powerless, especially when there's trauma involved in their loss. What would you add to that, Colleen?
I would just say that I think oftentimes we wait for that justification to reach out for help, but the death of somebody that they love is enough to warrant getting those layers of support in, like Erin said. And so get connected to a counselor, you know, as soon as you think it could be helpful. Like Erin said, it's just so helpful to start to learn what works for you with your mourning, what's going to help you express the grief that you're holding. And so why not start that from the beginning? And that's also just such a good sign to your child that this is all normal response to loss. And this is what we're going to do as a family to seek this support together. It takes a little bit longer for teens with the buy-in sometimes. I do hear that and see that. And so I think that's where some of the power of our peer support can come in, because kids really think they're the only ones going through it. Sometimes they don't realize that there's others they're walking alongside who have also lost someone so significant. And so if there's any type of group through your child's school or peer support group, even online forums that you can connect with, those can be helpful too.
We're talking through a lot of concepts related to loss, but this book is also very, very practical. And through your work with so many different families, you have developed tools and tips to guide them through, like you've shared what's going on in their body, but even just to not normalize, but guide them through what is some of the normal grief process. And you have an acronym, the CARE acronym. Can you work us through that just quickly, Erin or Colleen? Again, whoever wants to take it.
Go ahead, Colleen.
Okay. Yeah, CARE. C would be the care for your body in ways that you can with hydration and good food and some light movement. We don't have to go start running marathons, but a really good walk around the block can do wonders for you. A is accept support in the ways that feel best for you. Big emphasis on what feels right and best for you at the time. And from those that you are close with, that you're willing to receive that support from. R is rest when you can. It's really hard. Grief really disrupts our sleep. And speaking personally, when I am not getting enough sleep, I am never the best version of myself. And so when you're grieving, your stress is just up. Those cortisol levels really impact your ability to get good rest. So even if you can just take little naps here or there, or just lie down and give your body rest. And then E, again, is that expressing your feelings as they come in the ways that feel best for you. And more ideas with kids is go out and shoot hoops anything that involves catching or throwing a ball, you really have to be present in your body to do that. And kids do that all the time. It's really cool. They're really our biggest teachers in this. Go out and kick the soccer ball back and forth. Pickleball is so popular. You know, get into some of that with your family. A walk around the block. Again, that's kind of that side-by-side connection, not super intimidating, but it's that bilateral movement, you know, moving both sides of your body is so helpful for our brain. It gets both hemispheres chatting together, and then we can do great things when our brain's functioning as one. And so walking, squeezing both hands, alternating, little things you can even just teach your kiddos, like, hey, you know what I tried the other day that on my steering wheel as I drove? It really helped me. I was kind of feeling a little anxious and started doing this. And I thought, man, you could probably even do that under your desk at school. Maybe you'll get some buy-in on tips like that. So really think of it as just being on a journey together. You guys are all learning together about your own grief needs and also what the other people in your family need as well. That may be a little bit more space at times. It may be a little bit more attunement at others.
That's good. You mentioned it, and multiple times we've talked about coming alongside. And I've walked through, I've lost lots of friends, but women my age that have kids my age. And I've seen, you know, a variety of people walk through the loss process and how they invite others in, whether they have a caring bridge or, and they're giving information that way, or they're kind of keeping it close and only texts are going out to certain people. What encouragement do you have for those of us who are the alongsiders to know like what's actually helpful? And I think there is more conversation around this than there used to be. Instead of just saying, let me know when you need something. It's kind of like being very specific, offering a really clear need that you're meeting. But what other, like when you, Aaron, were walking through multiple grief, what was most helpful for you?
Yeah, I think what was most helpful for me was having those people that really I was already close to, that I felt very comfortable with, just those very close connections. When they were with me and they were kind of meeting my needs, but they were the ones communicating with other people. We have an analogy that sometimes we'll use, and it's kind of like when we have somebody like in the bedroom with us, if you think of a house, you have your bedroom people who are really close to you. And those are the people that know you so well, and you can say anything to them. And even just quite literally, I remember we have like upstairs, downstairs in our house, and somebody just made a sign down, like right at the bottom of the stairs that just said, please don't go upstairs. And it's for the family only. And I was really appreciating that because we have a wonderful community. We had a lot of people over. But I knew that I could just go to my bedroom, and that was a sanctuary, and that only my closest people would come just lay in bed with me. And I just knew that they would be there. And I trusted that whoever was in there was somebody I would want in there. And so just knowing, and then they can communicate with the kitchen people and those on the front porch, and just knowing that there are a lot of needs that need to be met. And, you know, it could be just if someone is like, I'm just thinking about what you're talking about, you know, young moms who still need to make school lunches. Like, how about somebody just makes the school lunches for you and they take on that task every day? What would it look like to pick up the laundry and just drop it back off folded? And these are tasks that have to keep going. And we had people, I know, after Tyler died that would just play with the kids, like in the yard. And, you know, we were really missing that, you know, dad time. And, you know, my friend's husbands were just there with us and just doing that. And I remember specifically one time just going out, and we rode horses out at somebody's farm, and the kids really enjoyed that. And so it's just using your strengths to come alongside. And sometimes it's baking and cooking and laundry. And just like I said before, with my friend who helped pay bills with me, it's like there are so many needs and you don't feel up to the tasks. But finding those people that can help you and just being able to communicate with that closest person so that they can make a list of what the needs are.
That's good. And also want to encourage the person listening. Sometimes we can feel this guilt, like I should be doing more. And I think if it's your really, really close person, you know that you're a bedroom person. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes force our way into the bedroom just to feel significant and like, no, I need help. And we have so many great helper women in the world. But to recognize that boundary is, it's almost mm-hmm. like you could be actually hurting more than helping. Mm-hmm. And I love that analogy of the sign on the stairs. Mm-hmm. You didn't, and I don't know that we've, I want to talk about it before we have to end, is the moving through your body. Talk to us more about trauma and your body. And I know this could be like its own whole podcast, but you said you learned better on how to recognize it and how to move through it. And mm-hmm. Give us some ideas about that.
Yeah, what I learned about just the storms in my body is just that as I would feel them, I needed to be able to express them in the moment. And so I kind of thought about it as like, as I went along as a storm and kind of, you know, how like weather vanes will kind of point towards what you, you know, just move around. And I kind of felt like it would move through me and then it would point me towards what I needed. And sometimes I just needed quiet time in Carter's room. Sometimes I needed to be in nature. Sometimes I needed to just float on my back, like in a body of water. Sometimes I needed to go to a yoga class. I did a lot of crying on my yoga mat, I have to say that. But that and just experiencing the trauma in my body, but yoga really helped me with that. And sometimes it was just taking a walk with my husband and just talking to a friend. As I did that, and you know, honestly, there were times when I needed to just really just scream it out. Honestly, it would just feel so like it was so intense in my body. And so I had to learn how to feel that. And I think what I needed most of all was a witness. To know that I wasn't alone. I remember one specific time when I felt just very dark in my soul. And it was like I almost couldn't cry. And it just felt so heavy inside of me. And I had a friend, I went to the grocery store and it was like almost like I was searching for something that would make me feel better. It was like I was in the snack aisle and like nothing sounded good. And I drove home and she was just standing there waiting for me. And she just welcomed me in her arms and looked at me. And I knew that she was holding the pain with me. Another friend came and just said, I'm praying that God would give me some of your pain. And I think like just the idea that as I was holding this in my body, somehow it's like this magic that I don't know how it happens. But as people have an intention to want to hold it with us, it spreads over our community and somehow it's less heavy. I don't know how that works, but I felt that. And I think people's intention to come closer and not be afraid of my grief. It's like you want to feel like when you're leaning into them, they're going to just lean into you. They're not going to fall away and be scared of it. And so just knowing that I had strong women, especially around me, really made a difference.
I think that's a really important one thing to end on. But also, if the loss is in a way that is a little more challenging, like with your mom's story, we had that with a mom here in our community. And just the difference between how people reached out to the spouse of that loss than the spouse whose wife passed away from pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. Just to not be afraid to mm-hmm. carry that grief just because it was a more challenging situation.
Oh, Heather, that's so true. And I experienced those deaths side by side. So the difference between the support I had for Tyler and what I had for my mom were so different. Nobody really knew what to say. And this was 20 years ago. Yeah. And I feel like our mental health conversations have become so much better and healthier. But I did feel that. And what I wanted to say is that just like I wanted to share about Tyler and how fun he was and how spontaneous, and I wanted to share about him, I wanted to talk about my mom and her tender heart and how she never killed a spider and how when she laughed, she slapped her knee. And there was so much vibrance in her, and she was such an amazing person. And so I think like honoring the people, no matter how they died, and to get closer and want to learn about them is so important. No matter if there is a death that's more stigmatized, we have to even get closer because you can feel even more alone.
Yeah. And the guilt gets, it tries to show up, and there's no,
yeah,
and that's not good either. Y'all are amazing. We could talk for days, I think. But praise Jesus, you wrote a lot of it down in a book. And everyone, you can, there's a link in the show notes. I know we talk about a lot of books, but this one feels unique, everybody. This is a gentle guide for living through loss and supporting your child when grief comes home. Thank you, Colleen and Aaron, for joining me. So thrilled to have you, and blessings on this book launch out in the world.
Thank you, Heather. It was so nice to be with you today.
Thank you so much, Heather.
I hope that was an encouragement to you. And just as you think about how teens process, how your kids process, how you process your own grief, that you are supported in that. And remember a couple things with our little community here, a couple ways you can stay connected with me. One is, of course, on Instagram at Don't Mom Alone. I'm always sharing things there. Also, every Tuesday, I send out an email, a little note from me with the episode, but also just kind of what I'm loving right now. And you can sign up for that if you go to holaheather.com, hola with an H, H-O-L-A, heather.com. You can sign up there. Also, we have our podcast clubs. That's a place where we keep it pretty organic. You gather your people, could be just one friend, three friends, your whole church community. And during the week, you listen to the episode and then you get together and you talk about it, kind of like a book club. We provide discussion questions. If you go on my website, you can sign up to join that. And we just have a little Facebook group that I put the discussion questions there to kind of help guide conversation. So I'm going to pray over us and this topic. Lord, I was reminded reading in the story of Jesus and Lazarus how Jesus was met with his own grief and loss and the passing of his friend, and how he felt the full weight of the grief and he wept. And I think it was pointed out that he also wept for all of the death that we will walk through. And when we question why, God, why do these horrible things happen? His response is a question of, where are you? Because he wants to be near to us. And I pray, Lord, if someone is in the place of grief and they are questioning God and they are pushing him away, that they would draw near, that he can handle their questions. But his desire, the whole reason Jesus came, was to be with. And he knows suffering, and he also has overcome death. And death has no hold on us for those of us who believe and have eternal life. And I pray, Lord, that you would comfort whoever is listening in this space of grieving their loved ones. And I just also read that if there was no grief, there would be no love. And I'm thankful that we do live in a world where we experience your love, God, and we experience loving others, and we miss them and we long for them and we can't wait to be with them. And Lord, I thank you that you knew how all that would interplay. Thank you for women like Aaron and Colleen who use their pain and they don't waste it, and they guide others to your comfort and love. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. Thanks for joining me here today. I will meet you back here next week. Looking forward to it. We're going to talk about Mean Girls with my friend Dr. Kelly. Jameson. All right, bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.